Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a loaded Monday. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, thanks for joining us. We are live in Los Angeles, 1 hour from now. Colin was right, Colin was wrong. Plenty of both. Howie Long today, Doug Gottlieb, Tim Hardaway. We'll check in with Matt Mosley in Dallas. Joy Taylor and I flew on flights all weekend together and didn't know, and didn't even know it. We ran into each other twice at the airport and had no idea. That was the strangest.
I had a connecting flight in Salt Lake.
Twice.
Which you take that flight all the time. Yeah. And I was literally standing at the gate like, I didn't ask you if you were going to Utah last weekend, but I just assumed you were. I was like, I wonder if I'm going to run into Colin. I got to meet Ann, which was great.
And then yesterday at the airport, we're both waiting for a car, and I look over and I'm like, Joy Taylor. She goes, you were on that? Yeah, I was. We flew together all weekend, had no idea. It's great to have you in.
Good weekend.
Fun weekend. You know, it's funny about this. You know, apparently this is the way it works in the NBA. If you're a favorite and you just don't blow out a really talented underdog team, you're no good. You're just terrible. We tend to forget that the Heatles, LeBron was the best player in the world. Bosch was a top 10 player in the league, and D. Wade was still very, very good on his good nights. In their first title, they trailed three different playoff series. The Clippers are now tied after four games, and the world's ending. Are you guys – y'all just start watching the NBA? These first-round playoff series can get really tough all the time for great teams. Let's make some assumptions here. We assumed coming into the playoffs – that when the Clippers are fully healthy, they're real good. They were 12-1 this year when fully stacked. Well, Patrick Beverley hasn't played the last three games. Kawhi is still great. That assumption was great. They were good in close games. That's been the story all year. And when they're healthy, they're good. They're not right now perfectly healthy. Patrick Beverley gives them 26 minutes a night. He's not healthy. But most of the assumptions are true. The assumptions for the Dallas Mavericks are great coach, terrific young player, not very good in close games, all offense, no defense, and would be interesting to watch with no playoff experience. Those are all true except one exception. Let's explain the whole series. Luka hit a 30-footer at the buzzer. If he doesn't, it's 3-1 Clippers, and they're going to close the series out without Patrick Beverley playing and Paul George playing as bad as I've ever seen him, and they'd still lead 3-1. That's the series, a shot. Everything we assumed is true. I mean, the reality is first-round playoff series are tough. Remember the 08 Celtics? That's one of the last great teams. They had a great year. They won 67 games. They won a title. They were pushed to 7 games by the Atlanta Hawks in the first round. The Hawks were an 8 seed. They had Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, Rajon Rondo, potentially 4 Hall of Famers, Doc Rivers, one of the best singular year teams we've had in the last 20 years. Pushed to 7 by the Hawks. By the way, they had another series that year in the playoffs, went to 7 games. The Heatles, last year the Raptors, trailed in 3 different series. 3! And they won. This stuff's not easy. I mean, LeBron against the East in the first round has historically been a sweep. But the East has been garbage at the bottom. It's been Washington's and Detroit's and Orlando's. You're not sweeping people generally in the first round of the West. The West is better. And there's also two factors that we have to acknowledge here. There's no home court advantage. It's a bubble. So these games, you know, you'd have started out first 2 games in L.A. It's not the way it works. So it's an advantage for the underdog team where there's no home court advantage. And Luka hit a 30-footer. Clippers are the better team. Clippers are going to win the series. But there's no – what are the assumptions – what assumption here has not – we knew the Clippers were very good when they're fully healthy. They're not. Patrick Beverley hasn't played in 3 games. We know Kawhi is still the best get-a-basket, get-a-stop guy in the NBA. I still think he is. LeBron may be more valuable. I think Kawhi, get-a-bucket or get-a-stop's better. Hall of Fame head coach, great bench. Lou Williams had 36 last night. What of that is a surprise? What for Dallas is a surprise? We knew they could score. We knew they were great offensively. We knew Rick Carlisle was smart. We knew they had a bunch of shooters. We knew they didn't play any defense. They still don't. And we knew Luka was good, really good. But, I mean, there's no big shocks here. Paul George is really playing poorly. Paul George will be fine. Paul George, here's my promise. He'll play really well one of the next two games. He'll look like an all-star. But this idea that everybody just runs through the playoffs, Raptors trailed in three of their series last year. The Celtics went eight games with the eight-seeded Atlanta Hawks. The Heatles struggled off. I mean, if you go to the Miami Heat games, first year they lost the title. Second year they were wonderful. Third year they were lucky to win it. Ray Allen shot. And fourth year they got whacked. This is hard for the great teams. We look at the war. Maybe it's because we're coming off the Warriors dynasty where we just think that this is the way it is. They got one team has all the good players. And do you remember the Warriors lost last year in the final? And the year before, Houston led them. And then Chris Paul got hurt. Remember that? The first year for Golden State, they flew through it. Everything after that was a struggle. Last year, didn't the Warriors with KD, Steph, and Klay last year struggle in the first round against the Clippers? They go like six games. This stuff's hard. This is the West. Luka's great. Carlisle's smart. Owner Cuban. This is a real good team. So, you know, we're freaking out. I mean, I just thought, you know, sometimes stuff happens. Luka hits a 30-footer. Here's Doc Rivers.
Honestly, I thought we were very emotionally weak tonight.
Why do you think that is?
If I knew that, I would be Sigmund Freud. But at the end of the day, you know, we're up 20 and we're getting technical fouls. You know, things like that just give the team juice, you know. We just, throughout, I've been saying this for three games now, we're so much better than what we're playing.
They'll figure it out. They'll win the series. They'll be okay. The assumptions are right. But these first-round Western series and sometimes first couple of rounds Eastern series have never been easy for the favorites. It's a lot of work. It was work for the Warriors after their first year with KD, Steph, and Klay. They couldn't stay healthy. They infighting. It's tough. It's always been tough. All right, let's shift gears to this. Earl Thomas, voted off the team by Raven players, is looking for a job somewhere. I'm sure he'll get it. There's always a team looking for talent. He's got it. But I tell my kids this all the time. There are real victims in America. You may have a bad day. You may have a bad boss. You may not like dad for a day. We are not victims. Millionaire football players are not victims. It's always been the thing about Earl Thomas that drives me nuts. He flipped off Pete Carroll in Seattle because he wasn't treated fairly. Let's revisit the Seattle years, where Pete Carroll drafted him over Taylor Mays, the more hype safety out of USC, and people couldn't believe it. Then Pete built a defense around him for 9 years. And then Pete, halfway through it, pushed for a contract extension that made him the highest paid safety at the time in the NFL. He flipped him off out the door. Then he goes to Baltimore, where last year, in his first year after they beat Seattle, he called it the sweetest victory of all time. The following week, he no-showed. Didn't show up for the team playing home. No-showed on Monday and Tuesday meetings. This guy has been drafted by Pete Carroll, maybe the most player-friendly coach ever. Then goes to John Harbaugh. Should be noted, they wrestled him away from Andy Reid. So the three teams that he either has been on or almost been on are Pete Carroll, Andy Reid, and John Harbaugh. John Harbaugh also one of the most player-friendly coaches of all time. And both kicked him out. Both didn't want him in the end. He had a personal issue, wife, gun, orgy, blah, blah, blah. Don't want to go into it. He said it was nobody's business. But when you're a star in the NFL and paid what you're paid, organizations do worry about your chaos and stability at home. It's something, not everything, but it is sort of their business. Just like my bosses would like to know if, you know, I was falling apart at home, like a little heads up. But what's driven me crazy about Earl Thomas forever is he thought he was treated poorly by Seattle. Are you kidding me? Pete Carroll chose you over Taylor Mays. The contract extension made you the highest paid safety. They gave you free reign, marketed you, promoted you, supported you, and you flipped him off. And then Baltimore has done nothing but surround you in that secondary. They brought over Jalen Ramsey. They got more pass rushers. They ask you to figure out their system, which is reportedly more complex than the Seahawks defense. Whatever. But there's no victim here. He was voted off by players. And Seattle finally had enough. Somebody will pick him up. But racing to Instagram, which is what he did, to say, hey, this wasn't me. I was trying to be. The book has been written on Earl Thomas. Not saying he doesn't deserve another job, but when your first two employers are John Harbaugh and Pete Carroll and the Ravens in Seattle, two of the best owned, run, supportive franchises in the league, and they're both done with you, you're not the victim of this one. That is a player's dream in the NFL. I get Pete Carroll, potentially Andy Reid, and then John Harbaugh wrestles him away from Andy Reid in free agency. That's a player's dream. Pete Carroll and John Harbaugh are a player's, maybe Mike Tomlin would be the only other coach as a defensive player. You'd be like, I want to end up with Mike Tomlin. So the book's been written completely on Earl Thomas. He'll get picked up. There's always a desperate team, a lousy team, a team that thinks they're a championship team that isn't, that'll overpay.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So Brett Brown's going to get fired, Philadelphia 76ers coach. Sixers got swept by the Celtics. It was ugly. I'm kind of over the whole Sixer thing. I never bought into it. It's hard when you have two stars. Their games don't work and their personalities don't work. But Brett Brown will pay the price and be fired. Did Brett Brown, let me ask you, did he trade away every shooter on the roster? Did Brett Brown demand they move up to get Markelle Fultz? Did Brett Brown say, you know what I think we should do? Pay Tobias Harris, a B player, $180 million. Did Brett Brown in a shooters league said, you know what, we need more size, Al Horford. What do you do with Ben Simmons? He can't shoot. Doesn't appear to be interested. Maybe you could bench him. Good luck in the NBA doing that. Stars run this league, and they always have. It's not a coach's league. That's college basketball. That's the NFL. Baseball's a GM sport. Hockey's a goalie sport. NBA's a star-driven league. Mike D'Antoni is told when James Harden will be at practice. Last year, you all told me Billy Donovan was a bum. Maybe it was Westbrook. Kyrie Irving said the world is flat. Last year, the Celtics struggled. The immediate reaction from the NBA media, Brad Stevens can't coach stars. You ever going to blame Kyrie for anything? Westbrook for anything? The players for anything? This is a hard league to coach. Brad Stevens is considered the smartest coach in the league. The minute he had problems with Kyrie Irving, he's a bum, get him out, can't coach stars, just he's a college guy. What? Billy Donovan last year, you were all crushing him. This year, you can make a strong argument he's the coach of the year. The Lakers are a five-star franchise, right? I mean, we would acknowledge kind of the Yankees of their sport. They've had four coaches in 6 years. The Knicks have had six coaches in 6 years. The Cavs have had four coaches in 2 years. Blame the coach. I don't care. People say Brett Brown's too easy on guys. Maybe he is. I'm not saying situationally he did something the other night drove me crazy. I don't know if he's situationally as good as Brad Stevens. Maybe he is a little easy on the players. Let me tell you something, folks. If you're not, you're out of work. I mean, Greg Popovich gets Tim Duncan and wins titles. There are no Belichicks in the NBA. I mean, let's be honest. It worked with Popovich because he had Duncan. The minute Duncan gets out of his prime, Spurs don't win, and Kawhi says, see ya. This is a hard league star, and I'm not saying Brett Brown's a world-class coach. I don't know. I don't sit and watch game tape. I know Nick Nurse in Toronto, my sources love him, and they love Brad Stevens. But, I mean, this he didn't trade away the shooters. He didn't sign Al Horford and Tobias Harris the bad contracts. He didn't move up for Markelle Fultz. I don't know what you do with Ben Simmons. He can't shoot. But this whole thing, it's the coach. The NBA, the solution is always get rid of the dumb coach. And sometimes you're right. But sometimes maybe it's beyond just Brett Brown. It's front office stuff, too, or ownership stuff, too. Or, oh, my God, I'm going to say it, sometimes stars are hard. This is a league where stars have power, they know it, and they often use it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
We've been talking a lot about safeties for the last couple of weeks, months on this show. Jamal Adams, Earl Thomas, a little honey badger. But let's talk about Jamal Adams and Earl Thomas. Earl Thomas just got booted off the Ravens. So safeties are the second lowest paid unit in the NFL. Players don't like to be underpaid. Tight ends are the lowest paid, but that's changing because we have some great tight ends and the culture of football now values tight ends more than they used to. But I understand safeties sometimes wake up in a bad mood. A, they're often the most athletic guys on defense. I mean, they're bigger, stronger, and can hit better than corners. They're faster and more athletic than linebackers. So they're often the most athletic guys, strength, speed combo on the defense. Secondly is they're asked to cover more field than everybody else. You don't ask your defensive tackle to be a sideline-to-sideline guy. A corner finds one guy, stays on him. Safeties are asked to cover more of the field. And then C, again, they're underpaid in their eyes. The problem is, safety is a vanity position. They get the big hits. They get interceptions. It took us 5 minutes to find highlights of Jamal Adams when he was traded. Try to find highlights of Stephon Gilmore of the Patriots. Nobody throws to his side of the field. It's a vanity position. You become very popular. It's a highlight position. You get big hits, and you get pick sixes, and you don't have the responsibility of just guarding a really fast receiver where you're often humiliated, even if you are Stephon Gilmore. You can cherry pick. I mean, Jamal Adams played more linebacker snaps than he did safety snaps. You're a freelancer. It's vanity. It's highlights. You become popular, and the media asks you questions. But there's a massive difference between popular and valuable. A lot of things are popular. Toilet paper is valuable. Transportation, even if it's a beater, is valuable. It's not always flashy. And that is the problem with the safety position. That Earl Thomas and Jamal Adams, I can't pay them big money. And I especially can't pay them big money if they're punching teammates. All right, I thought this was interesting. It's an article by The Ringer. So that means I've read the first 26 pages. I'm halfway through it. Anywho, just kidding, Bill. So they have an article on Aaron Rodgers, and it's very interesting. So I'll just give you the headline, and you can figure out what they talk about. This is not me. This is The Ringer. Excellent journalist. The perception of Aaron Rodgers no longer matches the reality. And so Ben Baldwin is an NFL writer, very much into analytics, not opinion, for The Athletic. And he argues Rodgers started declining 5 years ago. I started talking about it 2 years ago. There's a football stat called expected points added, EPA. Rodgers used to be the best in the world. Last couple of years, massive drop-off. The peak is over. He is merely a slightly above average quarterback for the last 5 years. Analytically. Now, I've been on this for 2 years. Ben Baldwin says, no, it's been happening for 4 and 5 years. His adjusted completion percentage in his peak years was number one, number one, number two, number one. It's now 26th. So here's the issue. Everybody in Green Bay bristles. But I've long believed that Green Bay is not only the smallest NFL city, it'd be a small college town. It's like a high school city. But it has a football team, an NFL team grandfathered in. So heroes mean a lot to small towns. The high school football coach is a hero. The one famous person that graduated and went on to run Ford. In big cities, has a lot of money, a lot of stars, a lot of big shots, and politics and business. Could be agriculture, could be manufacturing. Hey, in L.A., you're a star for an hour. Then we push you to the side, and there's somebody else who can sing and hit a better note. But in small towns, oh, they hold on to their stars. People forget how average Brett Favre was his last 3 years in Green Bay. And if you criticize Brett Favre, oh, my Lord, they went nuts. When you live in a big city, Joy's been in Miami, We live in Los Angeles. I grew up in Seattle. New York, Philadelphia, Dallas. When you're in a big city, like the minute a player, I mean, God, in Philadelphia, they got Carson Wentz and they want to bum rush him out of town for Nick Foles. It's a more hyper critical media. The fans have other sport teams to lean on if you don't deliver. I mean, if the Clippers lose, we got the Dodgers and the Lakers and USC. And if they lose, we got, but in Green Bay, this is their team. Last 3 years, Brett Favre in Green Bay, you won't even believe this. His last 3 years, he was a 500 quarterback, 66 TDs, 62 picks, completed 61% of his throws in a passer rating in the 70s. He was bad. He wasn't very good. But if you criticized him, oh my God, people went nuts. I've been saying this about Aaron Rodgers. The last 2 years, his touchdown numbers have fallen off a cliff. He gives you 25 touchdowns a year. That's like Thanksgiving for Mahomes. The last 3 years, he wins 40% of his games on the road. But if you criticize Aaron, oh, it's the offensive line. No, actually, they're top four in the NFL. Well, his defensive line. No, that's top 10 in the NFL. His receiving core, Devontae Adams, a top young receiver. His running back. No, Aaron Jones is a star. Their defense is no longer awful. They've drafted well. They've acquired free agents. It's not that Aaron isn't good. He still is a top five or six guy. But the passer rating is dropping. He can't win big games on the road. He gets nicked up more. His touchdowns are falling. He's still good, but it's a lot of Aaron Rodgers. It's a lot of Brett Favre. That in Green Bay, this is all they have. They hold on to their heroes. And just go back and look at Brett Favre's last 3 years. John Madden was telling you how great he was. He wasn't that great. He wasn't. I mean, Rodgers was better. Peyton Manning was way better. Brady was way better. Big Ben was better. Drew Brees was becoming better. But if you said that to anybody in Green Bay, they went nuts. This is the small town clinging to their star, gets hyper-defensive if you ever criticize them. And you should go read this article. The Ringer. Now, you're going to need about 4 hours. This is The Ringer. They don't do pithy. It is not part of their brand. It's going to take a while. Bill likes his long-form stuff, but the perception of Aaron no longer matches the reality. And there you go.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you like.
Colin right, Colin wrong on a Monday. Fire away.
Where Colin was right.
I don't buy into Philly, never have. I think you got to break up Embiid and Simmons. They're the first team out of the playoffs. They got swept. Blame whoever you want. I didn't like the Tobias Harris acquisition. I've just never bought into this. I didn't buy into the process. It did get them some players and picks. But we keep blaming the coach, but any relationship, if you're still going to therapy 8 years in, it ain't going to work. This thing just shouldn't be this hard. Simmons is hurt, and Embiid doesn't get along with him, and Simmons can't shoot. Break up the band, get a bunch of pieces, and start over.
Where Colin was wrong.
I still think the Clippers are the better team, but their defense is getting worked by Dallas. If you look at all the analytics, it looks like Clippers should win this series in about five games. Dallas is fun and feisty and can score. But I'll tell you, the Mavericks are getting penetration. They're getting tons of open looks. There's times Luka just looks too strong for anybody for the Clippers to guard. You know, Patrick Beverley's been gone for three games, but that's something, but it's not that much. Dallas's offense is consistently beating a Clippers defense, and I did not think that would be the case. I thought this would be, 117, 111, and the Mavericks would be getting low percentage shots and not getting penetration, and it's just been the opposite.
Where Colin was right.
Never bought into Jarrett Stidham. The other network, every analyst told you, oh, Jarrett Stidham is the guy. And I'm like, I watched him in college. He's okay. I don't get it. If Bill Belichick watched Jarrett Stidham for a year and still wanted 43-year-old Tom Brady back, what does that tell you? He's had a poor camp. There's one story out today. He didn't get in good enough shape, so he's got a leg injury because he's overexerted himself. We don't know if that's true, but that's one report. In the end, though, it really hasn't been much of a quarterback competition. Cam Newton has dominated it. And all I'm saying is, I watched him in college. He's got something, decent arm, but I never bought into these reports that this was the future. He's a backup in the NFL, and that's what it looks like he'll be this year.
where Colin was wrong.
I liked when the Ravens went and got Earl Thomas. He could still play. I think their secondary is unbelievable, but this thing backfired and pretty quickly. Stories came out today that last year, multiple times, he was a headache. So I got to take a wrong on it, and he's not a victim here. He's had Pete Carroll and John Harbaugh, and he can't make either work at the end. So I got the Ravens a 16-0. This doesn't help my case. Lamar Jackson's a little tweaked as well, but that part I'm fine with.
Where Colin was right?
Listen, Russell Westbrook is talented and dynamic and fun. Valuable? Houston leads OKC 2-1. It should be 3-0 in the series. What's interesting is Houston's offensive efficiency rating in the regular season was 112. Their offensive efficiency rating in the bubble, in the playoffs, is 112. You can be great and popular and dynamic and athletic, and he's been a great supporter, and he played defense in the bubble. I just don't buy into the valuable thing. I think I've seen a lot of Russell Westbrooks in my years watching the NBA. Unbelievably gifted, a first ballot Hall of Famer, but doesn't necessarily make teammates better, and Houston's offense is fine without him.
Where Colin was wrong.
Kind of shocked how effective Dwight Howard has been for the Lakers this year. Rebounds, totally accepted his role, not looking for attention. When they bring him in, he's often the second best Laker off the bench. You get size, athleticism, rebounding, shot blocking, situational offense. LeBron likes him. They have a good chemistry on the court. And I always thought he was little bit of an unfocused, a little juvenile at times, kind of underachieved for all his talent. He's been great here. He's one of the reasons the chemistry has been unbelievable, and he's become a fairly dependable bench player on a nightly basis. Good against Portland so far.
Where Colin was right?
Chris Middleton, 11 points a game, shooting 32%, 12 made buckets in the playoff series, 2 points last Thursday. Like, this is one of these, I don't get it. Like, this is why I think the Bucks are not going to win championships. I've said this. I think Giannis is amazing. They're probably this year the best team in the East, especially after the Celtics had an injury to Gordon Hayward. But Chris Middleton, this is the playoffs are truth serum. The real stars rise in the playoffs. Paul George, a little fool's gold here. Chris Middleton, a lot of fool's gold. Don't buy it.
Where Colin was wrong.
I've been open to spring football. It's not ideal, but I think you could have kids play in January, February, and then have them play in September. But Urban Meyer came on the show and said, nope, can't do it. It's not fair to the players. Nick Saban said it'd be JV football. The Big Ten this weekend said, you know, we're going to do spring football, but we're going to play indoors. Oh, boy. So every game's a road game for every team. I didn't think spring football would be great, but I thought, you know, if it's on television in January, February, March, I'll watch. It'll be cold weather for just the Big Ten, but increasingly the top coaches are against it. And I mean, if the Big Ten, who's for it, is saying we do think it's you have to play the games indoors. Okay, now that's like exceptions on the exception. Like if you were playing in the bubble in Orlando and you had to wear a mask as you played in the bubble, okay, then they just cancel the season. Okay, like if you're having to jerry-rig all this stuff and fewer games and now play indoors, then it's probably not going to work.
Where Colin was right.
Giannis today will mark his third early start of 4 playoff games. The NBA is telling you he's not the face of the league, and he's been around for 7 years, and he's been great for 4. He's a great kid. He's a terrific player. But I'm sorry, his documentary and his Instagram does not make him a face of the league. Zion is somebody the NBA has 3 times already moved the schedule around to get him on TV. The NBA is putting Giannis for the 3rd time in 4 games on 1 o'clock Eastern. Leagues will tell you and networks will tell you where the stars are. And you know where the stars are in the NBA? Playing at night. That's where the stars are in all sports. Playing regularly in prime time because that's where the ad dollars are better.
Where Colin was right.
The NBA draft lottery is a lot of fun, but it's useless. They do it to avoid tanking and to help smaller markets. And neither works. Because teams still tank in the smaller markets. Do you know the last 11 lottery winners? Cleveland three times, Minnesota twice, New Orleans twice, Phoenix, Washington, and Philly. And they're all a mess. I'll go back and say something I've always felt about the NBA lottery. Let the players decide where they want to play. And you think it's crazy. But with a salary cap, they couldn't go to the great teams. They couldn't go to the Lakers. They couldn't go to the Clippers. Where are they going to fit them in Boston? If you let players select teams, many players would say, I want to go to the bad team because I want to make the most money. And open up their contracts, let them make more money. This will never happen, of course. But the NBA lottery, once again, we had a lousy franchise win the lottery again. And they'll be lousy next year as well and the year after.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So he's a Hall of Famer, 13 NFL seasons, all with the Raider franchise. Now he's part of the new Fox Bet team, contributing to the Fox Bet Real Money app and Super 6 game. He's joining us, undisclosed location up in Montana. I'll just give you that. On his deck, it's beautiful part of the country on a lake. And, you know, it's interesting. Joey and I were talking about this. No preseason games. Now, I imagine if when you were in your last year with the Raiders, you couldn't have given a rip about the preseason. But I do wonder, but when you were young, does the preseason matter when you're a young player?
You know, I always felt like I needed a couple of weeks of live simulation. I'm not a fan of games in the preseason. I'm not a fan of scrimmages with other teams. I think you can control the environment and potentially avoid any kind of an injury if you're in practice with your own team and you're staying off the ground.
When you look, you know, it's funny. So these young quarterbacks, let's just take Cam Newton. So he gets no preseason with New England. He's not worked with the receivers. He's sharing snaps with Jarrett Stidham. And this is something we've said on our show. We got to lower expectations here for rookie quarterbacks. Teddy Bridgewater, Cam Newton, these guys with new teams. What's a realistic expectation, Howie, on Cam Newton this year?
Well, I think the Patriots are kind of an outlier in the way they prepare their players. You know, we talk about it all the time. We've talked about it. I've talked about it on your show. The way they change their scheme, their system, their approach week to week, half to half, quarter to quarter, series to series, is amazing. And that tells me they're great teachers. And Chris, having played there, I understand that there's an expectation. There's kind of a baseline expectation of what your kind of contribution is and your role in the offense, or the defense. And I think it's a fascinating signing. I was kind of surprised Cam went there. And I was also surprised that they picked him up, but I think it says a lot about Cam and his desire to expand his horizons and go play for a guy who's won countless Super Bowls and been in the Super Bowl countless times and feed off of that and replace Tom Brady. I'm excited to see what they do with Cam. Cam has given Bill Fitz in the couple of times they've played them. So I think Cam's abilities will be the focal point. And, you know, they don't make exceptions in New England. They didn't make exceptions for Tom Brady. Everyone's treated the same way. He has a different approach. You know, if Troy falls asleep in a meeting, you wake Troy up and you get him a cup of coffee. If somebody else does, you cut him.
Yeah. You know, in the NFL, it's never as bad generally as you think it's going to be. I've learned this through the years. Are never as good as you think it's going to be. And we're all talking about Tom Brady. It's going to be just roses and 40 touchdowns. And I'm like, time out. It's never free agents, trades. They're never as grand as you think. If there's anything about Brady to Tampa, Howie, that would worry you just a little bit, just a little, what would it be?
Well, the two things that worry me, of course, are that's one, can he hold up over the course of a long season? I certainly don't think he needs preseason games, and it looked like he got together with his receivers quite a bit prior to camp opening up. And the other thing that worries me a bit is where the happy medium hits for the Bruce Arians offense versus what Tom's used to running. Bruce is a guy who, you know, we all know, likes to get the ball down the field. He did it in Pittsburgh. He certainly did it in Arizona, which makes your quarterback more susceptible to being hit.
Yeah.
That's not a description for success with Tom. So I think there's going to be a happy medium, and that's going to be interesting to watch. They're loaded down there, Colin. If he stays healthy and they find a happy medium, which I'm sure they will, Bruce is a smart guy, and so is Tom. You know, the sky's the limit because their defense played well down the stretch last year.
Let's talk about your Raiders. I tend to be a bigger fan of Derek Carr than the NFL media community. They bring in Mariota, who I don't think's close to Derek Carr. What I worry about, Gruden can be a barker. Derek tends to be a tad sensitive. Yep. Is it possible, Howie, that Derek's personality and John, they're just not built for each other long term?
I agree with you. I think John, he has a very high expectation for everyone on the football team and everyone in the organization, and he's not shy about expressing it. And if you're thin-skinned, I don't think you can play quarterback for John Gruden. I think the process of Derek Carr adapting to John Gruden and vice versa, I think has been good for Derek Carr. I think it's toughened him up a bit, and you're either going to get tougher mentally, and, you know, he was tough physically, and I think the expectations are high for this offense. And certainly when you bring in a Marcus Mariota, who's been to a Pro Bowl, who is a dynamic talent, but a different type of player than Derek Carr. And you're hearing positives out of training camp about Marcus Mariota, but the expectations are high, but they're high for every player on that offense under John Gruden. So get your job done or they'll be looking for somebody else.
You know, you played 13 years with one franchise. It's just different. It just doesn't happen much today. And, you know, I look at Earl Thomas. And on those Raider teams, there were some guys that had their own personalities. They weren't perfect. Hey, when you came into the league, you were a tough guy. You weren't going to be pushed around. You didn't have to get along with everybody. What is the line, though, with Earl Thomas? Because the Raven players said you're out. How far is too far with a teammate? Value to disruption?
Well, I think, and you're very aware of this because you're from the Northwest, Seattle had something really special up there, particularly in the secondary, and Earl was a big part of that. And I think, you know, your kind of litmus test or what you know is what you experienced in Seattle. And I think if you're chasing that, you're chasing ghosts because that doesn't exist. And for whatever reason, and I don't know all the particulars, you know, whether there's talk of being late for meetings or missing meetings and being difficult to get along with. And for whatever reason, it just didn't appear that Earl fit there, you know, from the beginning. And he's a talented player, and I'm sure that someone will give him an opportunity. There's talk of Dallas. There's talk of San Francisco. Jay Glazer's telling me he doesn't believe Dallas, but we'll see.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting about this NFL world now that and we see it in the NBA. Players are better, younger. They get paid more early. You know, we talked about Kansas City. We're like – sometimes Trent Dilfer always said this, the hardest person to manage can be yourself, you know, like, and it's harder to manage great than it is bad. We're all motivated as guys. When we're bad, we work harder. That's our DNA. But when we're good, I look at Kansas City and I think, man, a lot of guys getting paid very young in spots, Super Bowl. Take me to your career on the best team you ever had. You have a Super Bowl team. Then you come back for camp. Everybody's got a little more money. Everybody recognize you. Everybody got a commercial. Take me to what that's like for Kansas City for the next 6 months.
Well, the good news is you have Andy Reid. That's the, you know, I think from just a foundation standpoint, setting the tone for the football team. And you've got a young, dynamic quarterback who just appears to be not only special physically, but he's just a special guy. And that really, I think, plays a big role in how successful this team could be moving forward. Certainly, are the pieces in place for them to contend for another Super Bowl? Yes. And winning it, it's a 16-game season. You know, you have injuries, you have complacency, all the things that Jimmy talks about. You know, I didn't get enough. I didn't get enough attention. I didn't get enough money. You know, those are things that factor in, but they seem to have paid their key players and they've got those guys in place. If everyone stays healthy, they're going to be there at the end. It's just a question of if they have a little luck, because it takes a little luck to win it.
Yeah. So I have a question for you. I said to Joy earlier, I said, Bill Polian used to always tell me, you got to have 3 weeks of hitting. Most guys need 3 weeks of hitting or you'll have injuries early. Should I expect the first 2 weeks of the NFL season to have more injuries? Because the hitting is just practice hitting.
It seems like soft tissue injuries. I think what's unique about, I'm not sure that necessarily applies in today's game, because I think players are, you know, they're bigger, faster, stronger. They're in better shape. They're continually working out. From the minute the season ends, you're back in some program off campus, and you know whether it's in Florida or Texas or California, you're in one of these kind of design places that train you as an athlete. I don't think you can simulate football, certainly, and I think you can get that done in a couple of weeks within the confines of your own building. But these players today versus the players 20 years ago are in such better shape, and they're far more prepared. I think soft tissue injuries are certainly a concern, because you can't simulate full go football until you play it, and we've seen that over the last few weeks.
So when you're on a lake all summer, what do? Does Howie water ski? Do you and Terry have big parties? What do you do all summer up there?
Well, I get in my boat, I throw my dog in there, I go out and I take a bath in the middle of the lake just about every day. That's the high point of the day. I know it's fabulous here. We have cherry orchards. We do harvesting. We do a lot of programs with the Boys and Girls Clubs up here, and it's a lot of fun. We enjoy it. It's my favorite time of the year. But then you got to get back to reality. You got to get back to work.
No kidding. Jumping in a lake, taking a bath with a dog is a country song just ready to be written right now by Howie Long, who is now part of the Fox Bet team, the Hall of Famer. They got a new Fox Real Money app, Super 6 game. And you don't age, my friend. You're a great dude, wonderful family.